Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Canis Albinus.
Makalua.
The Man Team.
Mega Bears Fan.
Hello and welcome to Polycast episode 375. I am bringing gifts of military units. I'm the Man Team, and as usual, I am joined by co-hosts Canis Albinus.
3/8 of the way to 1,000. Can we do it?
Oh boy.
Makalua.
Phil's units are just passing by, he swears.
And Mega Bears Fan.
I shall put your units in the closet and then re-gift them to you next year.
That would be a neat trick.
Oh my gosh, we're both going to use the charm ability on the units and they're just going to keep switching sides. No!
Hey, they could be city-state units.
It took 14 years to get to 3/8 of 1,000. What does that mean for actually getting to 1,000? Like,
everybody here going to be retired by the time we get to 1,000.
There will be no retirement.
Yeah, it would be. You'd have to double it plus like another 1/3 of it. So what's 1/3 of 7 of 14?
It's double plus 1/4, right? Because you got 3/8, then you go to 6/8, and then you only need 1/4 of the way remaining.
Well, it's 2/3 of 3/8.
Well, yeah, if you're going by what we'd already done, then you're right. Then it would be 1/3. But if you're going by a total, then it would be 1/4.
This is too much arithmetic for Saturday morning, man.
Look at all this amazing math.
Okay. I was going to say, this is why
we both get to be right, because we're using different frames of reference.
Times 7 is 27.
Wait, frames of reference? What, are we doing relativistic arithmetic? Like, what the heck?
Oh, dear.
Imaginary numbers.
Well, that would be one way to get into the future fast enough to see episode 1,000, so there you go.
We're looking at a total of, like, 31 to 32 years.
Due time dilation?
And it's been 14 years.
Like I said, everybody's going to be retired by then.
Hopefully, well, it's also possible that podcasts will be obsolete by then. You never know.
I think we'll all be cyborgs. That's the most likely outcome.
Yeah, forums will be obsolete because we'll all just be beaming our thoughts into each other's heads.
That's scary.
I keep being promised that, but it keeps not happening. Probably for the reason that it is very scary. I do not need people inside my head.
That tech would have implications on us as a species, I think. But it would be interesting, at least. Nerve staples when?
Please no. December! No. December brings us closer to Christmas, and also brings us a December update, which will be released on, I want to say, the 16th. Did they actually say a release date? Or did they just say that it was going to be a stream that day?
I don't know. I don't think they ever tell us the release day.
Usually they do, but it's usually around the 20th. But anyway, this particular update includes a city-state picker, so we get to pick which city-states we want. We get a button that says, no, I don't want to do this, you stupid AI, and stop asking me about it.
The button, yes, that I called the go away, Trajan, nobody likes you button.
Stop asking me for my iron and horses and niter and coal, or even, I haven't asked any for uranium. It was, no, you can't have any.
Oh, it's when they keep asking me for, like, a great work. That's the one that really bugs me, because it's like, oh, no, yes. I'm definitely not giving you that.
No can has.
Do you want it for 25 gold?
Horse for 2 gold a turn?
No, give me 25 cities and maybe we can talk.
I like.
Yeah, okay. So there are things that I would give that up for, yes.
There's also a good old-fashioned crap. I had it in my head, and now it's disappeared.
Nice. That is good and old-fashioned.
Anti-cav units are getting a buff.
and melee units getting a nerf at the same time. It's like two sides of the same coin. They're doing both of them at the same time.
What's the melee unit nerfed again?
Well, they nerfed the units... melee unit's bonus against anti-cav from, I think, 7 to 5.
And they nerfed the promotion bonus from 10 to 5. So, basically, they've just made it so that the starting unit, when promoted, or the warrior unit, when promoted, will be as strong as a basic starting unit is currently against anti-cav. The problem is, some people are saying that one of the big issues with this is it doesn't solve the problem that anti-cav are useless against ranged units. But it makes melee units much less deadly to anti-cav units.
So the battle cry promotion was nerfed from 7 to 5?
I think 10 to 5.
Gosh, was it 10? Holy crap. Yeah, you're right.
It may have been 7. One of them was nerfed from 7 to 5, and one was nerfed from 10 to 5. So certain civs have been buffed indirectly by this. Also, Byzantium doesn't get free units from capturing cities with existing entertainment complexes.
Oh, they're going to have to build them themselves if they want the free units then.
Exactly.
So I guess no longer prioritize capturing cities that already have fully developed entertainment complex districts.
Well, you can still capture them, but you're just not going to get anything extra out of
yeah,
them.
Yeah, you're better off going for it before they build that district now.
Yeah, certainly you need to prioritize that conquest.
Unless you like really need to run bread and circuses on that city to like shore up loyalty or something.
Yeah.
Not that that would ever be a problem.
No,
Da Vinci's workshop. No, Da Vinci's culture bonus now applies to workshops only. Einstein's science bonus only now applies to research labs instead of two buildings each. A bunch of later era great people wildcards policies now give additional points for having certain buildings, like art museums and workshops and all that fun stuff. The ley lines are being updated. No real details on what that means. A number of late game Eureka requirements requiring certain numbers of districts, buildings, units were reduced in amount, so no more 4 sewers needed. Maybe it's just me, but every time I get to the point where I get to sewers, it's like, oh, I already have the tech that gives me the boost for that before I even have the ability to build sewers.
Yeah, that was always a hard one.
Yeah, and if you prefer to play on a smaller map that also might be somewhat limiting, you might not have enough cities that are big enough yet. You know, you could have been squished in, and 4 is a lot. I don't have 4 cities that require a sewer.
A little bit less. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think they also reduced a couple of Eureka requirements that needed 3 buildings down to 2. Like, I think industrialization now only needs 2 workshops instead of 3, and I never particularly had a problem with getting 3 workshops, but I guess some other people did.
Maybe it's just like they were thinking about a tuning of how many industrial zones are reasonable to build and wanted to make it something that players would more typically pursue.
Yeah, I bet a lot of multiplayer people also play on smaller maps as well, which makes it harder to get enough cities to meet some of these requirements.
Yeah. Maybe some of these requirements should scale.
Yeah, I was actually going to say the same thing. It'd be kind of difficult to do, though.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know, it might not be that bad.
Well, I mean, when you're only talking about 2 buildings, right? Like, going up 1 game length and increasing it by 1 is a difference of 50%. Like, is that too big now?
Or you'd have to do it every other game level.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, you probably would. It's still probably better to have some scaling than none. That is, I don't know if it's worth the dev resources.
Here's a list of the ones that have changed. Also boosts to Babylon indirectly, but professional sports now only requires 2 entertainment districts. Capitalism requires 2 stock exchanges, workshop 2 workshops for industrialization, 1 coal plant for refining, 2 privateers for electricity, and 2 biplanes for advanced flight.
Yeah, the biplane ones was always another one that I would oftentimes be able to build or get that tech before I got that Eureka, just because, how often our biplanes really worth building against the AI. They don't ever build planes, so they're very rarely high priority for me.
Did anybody notice that somebody kissed a bust in the video?
Yeah, something that's apparently from Civilization Revolution. Everybody's like, ooh, that was the barbarian leader. Barbarian mode next? Maybe. That would be interesting. Swarm over all the civilizations? Sure, why not?
I would also like to say that now they've given us these picker features for several map features of the game, I really wish they would give us ones for civilizations that would let us like filter in and out which leaders are going to be in the game without us having to manually pick every time. Like, it'd be one of the things I've asked for before is it would be very nice if I could like pick a random civ to play as, but filter out the ones that I've played as recently, so I don't just keep getting, you know, Congo over and over again or whatever.
Yeah, if you could set up a permanent list pool, or not even a permanent, but you can set up your own pool for it to pull random from, both for you and for the AI leaders. Like, I have seen this guy so many times, I don't need to see him again. Out you go for a while.
Yeah, I want to play as a civ I haven't played with yet, but I don't know which one, so give me one at random, but don't make me have to reload the game 10 times.
Don't make me have to stare at Monty and Shaka again for the millionth time.
Some of the other policy cards have been changed. Rationalism now needs 15 population instead of just 10.
Yeah, and apparently they were talking about the adjacency points on that. Maybe you have to, somebody was speculating that you might need +4 instead of +3 to get the other 50% science boost. So they're making science a little bit not so easy to get.
Well, are they doing that with all of the similar policies? Like, there's one for commercial hubs, and I think also one for holy sites and theater squares, too. Hmm. Are those all going up to 15 pop, or only the science one?
Probably all of them, if I had to guess.
Yeah, we just don't have the confirmation on the science or faith and other things yet.
Oh! Can we get a thing that lets you pick which resources are on the map so you can get certain achievements easier, like the Silver Anniversary one?
Oh, yeah. That'd be cool. When you first said that, I thought you meant, like, strategic resources, and I was like, huh?
Yeah, I need these certain bonus resources, and how many games do I need to reload before I get the bonus resources? But yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, more game customization stuff is good.
Always good. I think we finished with that topic. Is there anything else?
Yeah, I felt like this one was a little bit smaller than some of the other monthly updates.
Well, the video was only 3 minutes instead of 6 minutes, so yeah.
Yeah, but there's some significant balance change type things hidden in that 3 minutes, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see if anti-cav units are actually worth building now. I suspect probably still no, but we'll see.
They might be worth building if you have nothing else now.
Yeah, you might be less screwed without resources.
Yeah, I'm imagining spearmen and pikemen just being more viable, you know, for at least defense if you don't have iron, being the big thing that that will change.
Yeah, they'll block for your archers a little better.
Yeah. All right, but from the gift of new features for the game onto the gift of Easter eggs hidden within the games, we had a thread...
Hold on.
Oh, we have a music cue, don't we? Dang it.
Yes, we do.
All right, and from the gift of new content from Firaxis onto the gift of old Easter eggs hidden within the games, we have a Civ Fanatics topic started by CMS Terra Nova, titled Ultimate Video of Civ 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 Easter Eggs, Secrets, and References. I did not know that there were... well, apparently the secrets and Easter eggs are very heavily loaded into Civ 4 and not as much the other games.
The earlier games, specifically.
Yeah.
The later games have all the references in the achievement names.
Right. Well, even Civ 1 and Civ 2, I think, seemed a little sparse. It was really Civ 3 and Civ 4 where they started really, really leaning into those Elvises. Apparently that was a big thing for, what, the first five games? Elvises all over the place. Elvises as units, Elvises as advisors. Yeah, lots and lots of Elvises.
Yeah, Elvis was a big deal.
Somebody on the early Civ development staff really liked Elvis.
I was particularly amused by the Mad Cow thing that showed up if you did certain things in the game.
Yeah, it was like an included mod. You had to go change, I think, some of the game files to get that to run, which was, of course, a reference to what was it, Diablo?
There is no cow level until there was.
Totally Diablo.
But that itself was an Easter egg, because originally that was something that wasn't a thing. Like people made it up as a prank, and then later on Blizzard made a cow level in a future Diablo.
Also, they mention a lot of things about Firaxis logos in places you wouldn't expect them, not just in Civ 6.
Yeah, they were in some of like the building graphics in Civ 4, which are, you know, really hard to see unless you use some kind of camera hack or camera mod.
They were on Cid's shirt in Civ 4.
Yeah, well, Cid's shirt in Civ 4 was a little bit weird because
it was fun to play as Cid.
Did you ever actually do it?
Yeah, we did the same start challenge series a lot, where you could pick from any number of nations in the same starting position on a particular map. And in a lot of those, I would instead swap the world builder file so that Cid would be there with no starting tech or resources and no traits. Yeah, almost like a control position for those. So yeah, I've used Cid quite a bit in Civ 4.
Personally, I think he should be the philosophical industrious leader, but
yeah, they should have. Maybe they should have done that. Maybe they were also planning to do a philosophical industrious leader, never did it, and then, you know.
Is that the only one they never used?
No. There was two other ones that were never used. I think one of them was with the protective trait, so it's not like they just didn't include trait combinations that were good. Yeah, there's two others.
Save I don't remember four them. Trait combos.
Like, I think organized protective, maybe? No, that might not be right.
Creative, charismatic, and organized protective.
Oh, it was organized protective, yeah, okay. Yeah, like, those would be okay. Like, they wouldn't be the worst here. But they're not, like, particularly good. Some people thought philosophical industrious would be overpowered. I don't think so. I think it would have been fine. Like, it would have been good, but I don't think it would have been out of bounds compared to some of the things already in the game. Especially if you didn't give a good unique unit. Like, they wouldn't have been able to touch Inca still, for example.
And a lot of the things there are almost less Easter egg-y, just as pop culture reference type things. And a lot of bit of, not a small bit of American political references, which for most people would probably just go whoosh, but the rest of us are laughing. Like, you have the tech for the internet and there's Al Gore. Oh boy.
Yeah, you had to be around at the time to appreciate the humor to that, but it is pretty amusing that they put a picture of Al Gore on for the internet and so far.
I was like, what? I think we even talked about that in the podcast at some point earlier. I was like, what?
I think we did, yeah.
I'm sure it got mentioned at least once. They did mention the Gandhi thing, which, as we found out from Cid's memoir, is not true either.
But I liked that story.
Well, it is true that there was a bug, but it isn't true that it was intentional.
Yeah, the bug was a nice meme.
It's probably the most lasting Civ meme in existence now, so.
Yeah.
I have a t-shirt that references it.
Paradox Games will reference it. It's certainly one of the more well-traveled Civ memes.
Wait, Paradox references it?
In the Hearts of Iron achievements, there's one that says, our worlds are, back by... No, it didn't say that. There's something to do with India and nukes, and in the mushroom cloud is Gandhi's face. in the achievement icon.
That would be pretty effective, yeah.
So, like, there's no question that's a Civ reference. I have that one. I should be able to look at that quickly.
And I'm going to have to watch the Great Barrier Reef more closely next time it's in-game, because I didn't realize they had Nemo swimming around it.
He's not really orange, though, apparently.
Yeah, it looks a little bit more like Dory in the video as well, but the fact
well, they're both there. Yeah. Both Dory and Nemo's dad are there, but Nemo's dad is more brown than orange. And then I didn't realize that Thunderfall and Ming were cities in the city lists.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't either. It's just not something I ever would have encountered when I was playing.
I did know about Apolliton, though. I knew that one was in there. Those are old references. Now I'm waiting for the Polycast reference in one.
Oh, the achievement title is Our Words Are Backed with Nuclear Weapons. So yeah, there's no question. As India develop and deploy a nuke. And it's got Gandhi's like Sith War head in there. Yeah. Yeah, that's not subtle at all. I knew it was something like that.
Yeah, there are a lot that are just little art things that you wouldn't have thought to go looking for, but now that you see them, you're going to think about that every time you see that thing.
Just a nice small references to movies here and there throughout the series as well.
Oh, yeah, like what is it in the Red Death mode or whatever? They have the destroyed Statue of Liberty from Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did I miss that one?
Because we didn't play it much.
Yeah, I just didn't play it.
Art may not always generate on the map as well.
I need to actually play the Red Death mode, but it's just so not Civ.
You don't know what it is, but it's like, what is this other game you got in my Civ? Not that I don't mind having other things in my Civ, but what is this?
I do think it's pretty funny that the billboard on Broadway is a sectoid.
Well, everybody thinks they're just in costume, right?
Oh, that's also an un-Civ reference.
Yeah, but it's another Firaxis game reference, so.
Yeah, for sure.
Adopted game.
I mean, it's not like they put XCOM squads in the last game.
Yeah.
Which I don't think showed up as a reference or Easter egg in this video.
Seems like
maybe it was like so in the game, like as part of the game, that it wouldn't really qualify as an Easter egg. It's a buildable unit.
Yeah, it'd be like talking about all the like music clips and artwork and stuff like that that was used for the great works in Civ 5 and Civ 6. No, I'm sorry, those aren't Easter eggs. Those are features.
Yeah.
It's a blatantly obvious reference as opposed to something kind of subtly hidden.
Yeah.
I didn't know that you could hear the Civ 5 Brave New World theme if you zoomed in on a holy site.
I didn't either.
Oh, no.
I missed that song.
Yeah. Yeah, Civ 4 and Civ 5 had, like, amazing intro music. It's a tough act for Civ 6 to follow. Like, it's not bad, it's just not as good.
I think Beyond the Swords wasn't good, and Base Civ 5s was less good, but...
I agree. But then who used those?
Yeah. Because in Beyond the Sword, you got the option to put it back to the regular. So it was like, I'm going to use that instead.
But the real play was to set it to the Warlords one.
That one was fun, just not as pretty.
Yeah. What are you talking about? It was gorgeous.
I wouldn't call it gorgeous.
Just when you're trying to get into the mood for how to play the game properly, that is the best song.
Properly.
I thought the Phil version would just play the Imperial March.
Well, that's not one of the options in Civ 4 by default, though. For the loading screen. So you have to work with what you have.
Yeah. Alright, so I guess the next topic is heroes.
Speaking of working with what you have.
Of might and magic.
No, that's a different podcast.
Alright.
Where is it? Ashmantius started a thread over on Civ Fanatics with a bunch of hero observations. They were playing their first game and they had some thoughts as they were going in. sort of a few things that were like tips and what they thought of four heroes they had in their first game. Don't recruit the hero until you have a foreseeable need for it, because they have that lifespan and they're going to die after a bit. I mean, sure, you might get beaten by somebody else to it, but it's no point in having it if you can't use it, unless you're just trying to play denial tactics, I guess. To pay attention to the area where the hero dies, each monument has two heroic relic spots, and when you later on where that hero dies, when you get to archaeology, you can go dig up their heroic relic.
How did that exploit work that resulted in infinite techs with team play? That was interesting.
Oh, that, yeah. I saw that where Spiffing Brent and Potato McWhiskey did that. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
We already have like nuclear power, and like we could make GDRs if we wanted to, and it's only turn 30 or something like that. It's just what?
Oh yeah, they found a way to trigger a Eureka.
It was a bug with a city state where each time you gained the suzerain status, you were given it was the new city state that was added by the last patch. They have like a building, and the first time you build that building, you get like a tech boost. But there was a bug where if you lost suzerain status and then regained the suzerain status, it gave you another tech boost for that same building.
All you have to do is just sit there and give yourself RSI by taking your governor in and governor out and governor in and governor out and governor in and governor out. It's like, oh, yep.
Yeah, so you just kept moving the governor, was it Amani, in and out of that city-state and get the entire tech tree with Babylon.
Just got to get that macro set up.
And since they were on a team, both civs got all the techs.
And now that there's a city-state picker in the game, or will be in like a week or two, everybody can do that, assuming they didn't patch it out.
Assuming that doesn't get patched out at the same time they patch in the city picker, yeah.
You don't have to re-roll the game 10 times to get that city-state. Well, you might still have to, I guess, because it might not be anywhere close to where you start.
It might not be by you. It might be on an island off on its own or something, depending on your map type. Or you get one of those weird air quote Pangea scripts, which it's like it makes a draws like a W shape or something across the map, and you're on one end and it's on the other end. It's still technically on the same Pangea.
Yeah. Those are the best, actually. I like those as more dynamic versions of Pangea than just a blob.
Well, the one time it's been frustrating is when it's been in the multiplayer and the human players are all lumped to one side of it. It's like, so how am I supposed to get over there and fight?
Cross the water, of course.
Oh, okay. So when we get to about turn 100, I actually can sail across the water.
Well, yeah. Just utilize that Eureka to get the cartography quickly off.
All right, what is that?
I suppose if you're Babylon, that's a realistic piece of advice, but otherwise, you'll get there.
Oh, let's see, they also jumped across on the first hero. Next time I'm going to be more selective. Yeah, you have to look at what the hero is going to do for you, because even in the multiplayer game that we were playing first with heroes last week, I was passing up on certain couple ones. Like, that's a good hero, but it's not good for me right now. Also, they make great meat shields when you're attacking another city, especially early on, because they have such a high... it's not damage resistance, but you know what I mean. They are tough to take down comparatively to what's trying to attack them, and the AI will zoom in on the hero and ignore your units, plinking them to death from the side. And also because they usually have a high movement, you can just zoop them in and zoop them back out if they get too hurt. And I didn't know you could teleport them from city to city like a great person.
Well, they are great people on steroids.
Yeah, but I didn't think of that. I was just moving them around. This is me doing a forehead slap, because derp. Let's see. On the first game, they had Himiko. Speaking of trying to get suzerain status, I mean, I don't think you'd get her as a hero before you could get Amani as a governor. But it's a great way to levy troops early on. It's also great if they levied the troops and then you turn around and go, no, those are actually my troops. You just thought you had that city state. And I agree that Maui is awesome, because being able to add newer other bonus resources on there. And I had the same thing happen that they did, where they tried to use Maui's power on a spot that was already going to have a resource later. I don't think we got to enough tech point in the game, but I think it was probably going to be either aluminum or uranium. But I already knew I had some, thanks to Maui. they tried Arthur. I can speak. You have to have a unit to spare to generate the questing knights, and the questing knights also expire. Well, I guess if you had a target you were focused on right then, and it wouldn't matter so much about both he and the knights expiring, and you could probably run over a couple of cities at least with him. I don't know, I haven't had him yet. And I had also gotten Sinbad in a game and got to be, well, okay, you guys do that. I'm just going to go explore everything. Anybody else got to play with the heroes? Had anything good or bad?
I finally got my computer into my house this week. So I have not yet played because I've been busy trying to clean stuff up, but I'm getting ready to start again.
I have not. I've still been playing around with Babylon.
Ah.
Yeah, I haven't messed with them.
I want to try all the different modes on at once and see what happens.
It's a lot of new rules to learn.
Well, it'll be like going into a new big full-on add-on as opposed to just a little DLC thing.
Yeah, altogether, it's one big expansion.
Yeah.
With vampires and magic and all kinds of weird stuff.
Strange.
So what you're saying is that it is Heroes of Might and Magic.
Cults, vampires, abilities that feel like magic. Heroes, even. What else was in here?
Mass slow and mass haste, Len.
Oh, boy. Somebody did suggest not bringing out your combat heroes right before the end of an age because they will be stronger if you wait because they upgrade with the ages. Be a little stronger each age, so you'd be better off waiting for the stronger version. Stronger, faster, better?
Bigger, better, stronger, bester. Whoops, that was not right. Apparently Himiko is really good at fighting.
Yeah, on top of being on top of also being great for mecking about with city states, so you know, somebody else here in the thread? Let me see, who was this? Well, I have to scroll up too far now. Ah! But it, had actually managed, got Arthur early on and managed to roll right over all four of Arabia's cities. With just that, just him and the four questing knights, no support. It was like...
Pretty impressive.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, sure, I have no military now, but I don't have a neighbor now either. Well, it's a neighbor to worry about, I guess we should put it that way.
Do the questing knights have coconuts?
That would be hilarious if they're walking along behind him and just going clump, 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 clump.
We get word from Palo in the thread that vampires do not gain the strength of heroes or questing knights. So that's important to know.
Yeah, I haven't got to use the vampires enough to make the comparison.
Well, I'm so busy playing with the Void Seekers. Because apparently the Void Seekers are like the best.
Well, let's turn your faith into bonus other things. Sounds good to me.
It's not like and I'm using the faith for anything.
Yeah, depending on the game. Especially in multiplayer, I don't always get a chance to do religion, so hey, I might as well turn my faith into other stuff. Bonus things.
Yeah, it would be nice if just in the base game there were more generalized uses for faith besides just recruiting religious units early in the game, because not having to save all of it up until basically recruiting naturalists and rock bands at the end I think is kind of dull. Like, patronizing great people with them is just so darned expensive. But it's the only thing you have to do up until the end of the game.
Well, that's come in handy on some eras where I was just enough short that I need if I could get just one or two great people. And I might not have all of the faith for it or all the gold for it, but I could do purchase one with gold and get the other with faith and, you know, save myself from a dark age.
Yeah.
So I can find a way to spend it. Because there's also sometimes if you get spread religion too, you can do buildings and things and buy those with faith. So it just depends. Okay. Judging from everything that everybody's having fun with heroes. I don't think anybody's found a hero they thought completely was bleh. I mean, maybe not as impressive as they'd like, but still.
A note from, looks like this is UW Habs. Apparently, wait, this is not the thing I was looking at. Yama Exhale Me is the name I'm looking at. Apparently, if you're using Simon Bolivar, you can use the Comandante General's retire effects to increase your heroes by +4, but it is not permanent when they come back. So when the lifespan is gone, that bonus is gone.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about doing that, because usually you want to apply it to the troops that stay around. But if you had a group and you were playing to anyone, you happened to also splash the hero with it at the same time, why not?
Yeah.
Did the hero unit stack with the military unit?
I don't know.
It depends on the type. Some of them are considered military and some of them are considered civilian units. But they will, but you can put like the actual normal great general and stuff with them. So.
Anything else on this one? Do we have any more observations?
Not until people get to play more with heroes, but so far everybody's liking the heroes. So, you know, good job there for Axis.
Definitely enjoyable.
So you cast Blind, then Resurrection, then...
Phil, what are you doing?
He's playing Dominions.
No, I'm playing Heroes of Might and Magic with saying that kind of stuff.
Oh. It's hard for me to tell because they all use the same spell names.
Well, that's because D&D.
Yeah. A lot of things are because D&D, to be fair.
Yeah. Next topic. The Civ 6. This is not a Senate topic.
Well, I guess it is now.
It is now. I'm moving it. Nice.
Okay. The Civ 6.
Welcome to the Senate.
Welcome to the Senate, where we discuss art styles. The Civ 6 has posted a poll which asks, do you like Civ 6's art style, or do you think it can be improved?
Hey, this topic has a vote. That makes it Senate-like.
Well, yeah, the problem is, it originally says multiple votes are allowed.
It's just
but
yes
there's
or no.
Only two options.
They both say can be improved. Yes, I like art style can be improved.
I think
can be improved.
I think what the original poster was trying to go for was to have a yes, a no, and a yes, but could be improved. And somehow it turned into yes, but could be improved, and no, but could be improved.
This also, is like a time and space quest to ask if you want fries or that, isn't it?
I'm 2104.
Yeah, the poll will close on March 30th, 2104 at 6:50 p.m.
Better get your vote in.
We will probably be at the 1,000th episode by then.
We will be well past it if we're still doing it. But the thread or the poll currently lists 77 votes for I like the art style and 31 votes for I don't like the art style, for a total of 74% yes and 29.8% no.
Which does surprise me, because I remember when Civ 6 first came out, like there was a lot of complaining about the art style. So either people have warmed up to it in the like 3 or 4 years that the game's been out, or all the people that hated it stopped playing the games and aren't on the forums anymore.
I mean, should we point out that the two percentages add up to 103.8%?
Wow, this poll is just all kinds of weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's all right. We're already checked out for the holidays, too. The posters on Civ Fanatics can be as well.
Oh, so in post number 7, it tells us that one of the moderators actually deleted the third poll choice to simplify it. And somehow that resulted in more than 100%.
Oh, okay. So, we don't have to blame the original poster. Blame the moderators.
I think the biggest complaints thus far are the hills don't look like hills.
Hills could be more hilly. Yes, actually, just a little more hilly. Because sometimes, depending on what terrain they have on top of them, especially if there's forest nearby, I have a trouble telling if it's a hill or a flat with a forest. It's like,
yeah, sometimes there's just this slight little bit of like shading, right, on one side of the grassland. And I have to hover over it to see the tooltip to find out if it's a hill or not. So yeah, that stuff, there's nitpicks like that that could be improved. I posted on this topic, and one of the things that I suggested is I wish there are some units where there's only like one like character in the unit, so you don't get that like instant at a glance view of how what the unit's health condition is, you know, because with like warriors and other units like that, there's like what, three or four of them in the graphic, and then as the unit takes damage, like the actual character models like die, and then eventually there's just one guy left. Well, with scouts, there's only ever one guy in the unit, so it could be at one HP and it looks, you know, completely identical to what it looked like when it was at 100 HP. So there's little things like that that I think they could have maybe polished up a bit more, so that you get a little bit more information from the unit graphic. But it's a minor nitpick.
Critical existence failure.
Yeah, and I think like some modern units do that too. Like I think tanks, there's just one tank in the graphic.
Yeah.
Like, battleships, yeah. Which I guess kind of makes sense because the battleships are supposed to be big. Like how many battleships can you fit on one tile? But,
well, you know, having a progression between a clean, shiny battleship and a dinged up one to a smoking one.
Yeah, like the tower's falling down and it's listing to one side. Yeah, they could have done stuff like that. But like I said, super minor nitpicky kind of things.
Nitpicky, yeah.
But gosh, yeah, I remember when the game first came out, like there was some vitriol about, there were people saying they weren't going to play the game because it looked like a mobile game. And it's like, so?
Yeah, I don't care about art style like that, per se. Well, I guess they could. There are some conceivable art styles where if Firaxis chose it, it would bother me. So I guess I shouldn't say I don't care about it at all. It's just that I don't care about it very much.
Yeah,
I mean, you play Dominions, and the art style on that is kind of...
Yeah, but if they went like sepia tones, or and then made it really hard to distinguish the terrain or something... And then, like, all the Sith leaders were, like, chibi memes and sepia tones or something. Like, that would get to even me, I think.
Yeah, and there's 8 Houses of Elixir posting this thread is that one of the things they love about that, they have a poorer eyesight, so that bright, vivid color palette really helps them distinguish things. Especially for terrains and districts and such. I mean, he's even the guy that originally brought up the hills should be more hilly.
Yeah, I was always an advocate of the art style for this game. Like, I don't think from early previews, because it was hard to tell at that time, but like once I actually got the game in my hands, I was like, no, this art style works really well because it is very informative. I've said several times on this show that I like that the map of the game conveys so much information about the game state, especially compared to Civ 5. And that's just something that's harder to do if you're trying to go for a more photorealistic visual style, because everything just kind of gets gray and murky and things have to be scaled differently and things are small and hard to tell apart. Whereas with this more cartoony visual style, like everything just pops and stands out more. And yeah, it's easier to tell things apart. Like they've got different animations, exaggerated animations for when like improvements are being worked, right? When improvements are being worked, they're animated. When they're not being worked, they're not animated. So you can just, you know, when you're marching your army up to an enemy city, you can not only tell every single building and piece of infrastructure that's in that city, but you can see exactly what tiles that city is working without having to go into some separate screen or widget.
Yeah, we file that under the thing that we talked about when I was doing game design years and years ago. Was if you have to have a separate view to show something, what's wrong with the regular view that you can't see it?
Right. And I think that's something that just a lot of the early critics just missed, or, you know, didn't care about or didn't think about. You know, they just crossing their arms and stamping their feet and, no, it's ugly, I won't play it.
Yeah, well, and sometimes it's also the way it's presented. There is a difference between looking at the game in normal view and strategic view. And sometimes the information can make more sense in strategic view. Just, yeah. Between those type of views, there's a difference because people see information, so to speak, differently. So for one person, strategic view might be better, but the other person can do the normal view just fine.
Right. The one thing that I will say that I am critical about with the art style, though, is the leader screens. And it's not necessarily that they're like that the art itself is bad. Like I think the leaders look fine, you know, they're a little exaggerated and cartoony, no big deal, and the backdrops are pretty. Like, you know, they should find a way to put those in the game somewhere. But I much preferred Civ 5's leader screens, where there was, like, a fully rendered environment, you know, and the character felt like they were in a place. Whereas Civ 6, it's, as far as I'm concerned, it's basically just a full-screen version of the leaderhead portraits from Civ 4, right? Like, there's just nothing much going on there. So that's an area where I think they could have done better is, you know, have some, like, environments for the leaders to be in, you know, little visual touches where they're, like, walking around and, you know, Civ 5, you had, like, Washington playing with his globe over in the corner of his office, stuff like that.
Yeah, I do a little bit miss the thing from Civ 4, whereas the eras change as you advance in technology, that the depiction of the leaders changed.
Yeah, at the beginning of the game, they had, like, Abraham Lincoln with, like, a bearskin hat.
Which is a lot of work for the art department, I know, especially when it's animated, but it was an interesting little touch because it makes sense because, yeah.
Yeah, I was hoping going into Civ 6 that the leaders would actually be, like, even more animated and expressive than in Civ 5, where, like, you know, they... I was imagining things like you do something to a leader that, like, makes them angry, and they, like, start flipping tables and throwing books around the room and stuff like that. But, yeah, no, unfortunately, it's just a single person just standing in front of an oil painting. So that could, I think, have been better.
And somebody's pointed out here some of the alternate colors when the Civs can't use their original colors, and it gets really confusing sometimes. Also, some of them are just terrible combos.
Yeah, I was not a big fan of that new system as soon as they introduced it. Like, I was like, no, this Civ should be that color, but they've got so many Civs and leader combinations in the game now, it's getting harder and harder to find unique combinations of colors for them.
Yeah.
But I still I still feel like there had to have been, like, a better solution that would have kept the more distinct colors and, you know, not have them just be so completely different. Like, it's not just the fact that they have different colors, it's that the same leader or the same Civ will just have completely different color palette from game to game. And I feel like there's had to have been a way for them to make it a little bit more similar. I don't know. Maybe for Civ 7, they'll have to each Civ will have to have, like, a 3-color palette so that there's more unique combinations for leaders and new DLC Civs.
Considering how many Civs in the world, flags are red, white, and blue.
Yes, right. Just change the order. It'll be blue, red, and white for this Civ, and white, blue, and red for that one.
We can work this out.
But yeah, I definitely voted yes on this poll. I like the art style.
I think we should just have gray and gray in different shades.
Oh, that's what you mean.
The best color scheme.
Civ 6 Noir.
Yes, more games with a gray and brown color scheme to make you depressed.
That's true. I forgot about brown. That's fair. We could do gray and brown.
Yes, Civilization, now brought to you by the developers of Call of Duty.
Fallout 4.
Call of Civilization.
John Madden edition.
Oh no, not yearly editions. Please no. Do not take cues from EA.
We're going to run the option rush.
Civ 20 down the line. We can't afford to put in city states. It's too much work. But you had them in Civ 5 and Civ 6. Why are they not here? Nope,
don't
too
worry.
Much work.
You can buy them one by one.
Yes, if you ask very nicely, we'll let you buy them later.
Things that the developers of Madden say they can't do that were in 2K 2005, 15 years ago.
Earlier versions of Madden, like, more than a decade ago.
Heck, just like 3 years ago, they took the referees off the field because they started saying they technically can't do that anymore. And it's like, but it was in the game 4 years ago, running on the same engine, on the same platform. Like, what happened?
They needed the extra memory space for the alternate color jerseys.
That's right. We cannot have shiny helmets and referees on the field at the same time. It's just too technically demanding for our PlayStation 4s
too
and Xbox
memory.
Ones. Yep.
But gotta have that ultra-realistic texture on the field.
Yeah, this is the slippery slope with game graphics being too good. Is sometimes it is not actually good for the game.
Right.
Development costs skyrocket, which means
be overinvested.
Yeah, development costs skyrocket, which means the developers and publishers can't afford to put as much content or features or mechanics in the game. And then, yeah, you run into memory constraints and things like that that limit the other things that you can do. I mean, I would not be surprised if some of the AI limitations of, for example, Madden are the result of so much memory being used up by graphical assets. And advertisements.
I find it hard to believe in Madden's specific case, because they have no evidence of trying at all, but that's neither here nor there.
I actually...
Back to Civ!
I was just going to say real quick, I do think it's funny that the big new feature for this year is a backyard football arcade mode, and I said I think it's telling that the best new game mode that they put in the game in the last 15 years is the single one that's most divorced from NFL football. But yes, to Canis, back to Civ.
There's only so much sports talk we can get away with.
Yeah, I know.
That's true.
Oh no, sports ball. Ah!
Well, we're not talking about real sports here, in either context of the word.
Well, if you like, I could point about racing for a while, just for a change.
Like, I think chess is a better esport than Madden, so... It depends on what kind of sport we're talking. But okay. Are we done with the art style?
I think so.
All right. Well, speaking of EA, we have loyalty mechanics and... Okay, maybe that was a little too much.
No, that was the good one. That was the good one. I was in the middle of the talk.
That was on point, yeah.
Yes, all loyalty makes it impossible to invade other continents. I cannot pronounce the Caesar's name from the forum here. I'm sorry.
Tidosagi?
Okay, Tidosagi. I'll go with Canis's interpretation. So how are you supposed to conquer another continent around medieval or Renaissance era? There's a kind of the rival empire on it. Okay, so I've done this. I've done this on the high difficulties, so it is possible. Many people have done it in addition to me. What you want to do is conquer multiple cities around the same time.
Or alternatively, because this is medieval Renaissance, there's probably areas of the map that are not settled yet. You can build like 2, 3, 4 settlers and go settle in a corner of the other continent to build up your base of loyalty. Alternatively.
I guess. But you know, like that's going to be pretty weak compared to the AI cities that are established, if loyalty is a problem at all. Also, if you get lucky, which I don't suggest relying on, but you can trigger the emergency that will give your city loyalty resistance so that it doesn't flip. And so that particular city will then hold on for quite some time until the emergency ends. And if you cannot capture additional cities by the time the emergency ends, you probably shouldn't have been launching that invasion. But absent that luck, just don't take the first city right away. Like, knock down its walls and make sure that it can't like harass you further. And then just make sure you take 3 at once in a triangle-ish setup, and the capture cities will start applying loyalty pressure to each other that is yours rather than the AI's, and because it is a lot of pop, it's pretty significant. So you can pretty much hold on to cities effectively like that if you're taking them quickly. I've even managed to do intercontinental attacks on Eleanor on Deity that way, although you do have to be a little faster, and that was later era than medieval Renaissance when I did that. But yeah, certainly in medieval, you can still like bust down city walls, get them low, and just take 3 at once. And then from there, it's like playing on your own continent. The bigger challenge, right, Drusane, is landing all your units there in the first place.
Oh no,
Drusane, just put your units there first, and then declare no. Okay, hi, Drusane. Good turncast moment from a few years back.
Anyway, one of the reasons, though, that I did bring up settling your own city is because, or your own cities, to build a base of loyalty is because during the medieval and Renaissance periods, you should have access to the Hic Sunt Draconis dedication bonus if you're in a golden age, which means that any new cities that you found on a different continent will start with 3 population and +2 loyalty. So that definitely helps. You combine that with some domestic trade routes, and you can build a population base very quickly with that dedication bonus.
Yeah, that's true.
And of course, just in general, it also really helps if you are in a golden age and or you are attacking someone who is in their dark age.
That's true all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Just generally speaking.
Yeah, if you're like dark and they're golden, that's going to be pretty rough. Possible, actually.
Yeah, other things that you can do, you can, when you capture or found the city on the other continent, whichever you choose to do, put the Governor Reyna in that city with the contractor promotion, if you have it, and buy an entertainment complex, and then just start running bread and circuses.
Yeah, another suggestion in the thread is to don't, like, gun for the capital at first. Go over to one side and start eating your way in from there. Because that will also, especially if you do what Phil's talking about, and you take three or four at once, so you're away from the strongest part of the loyalty, and you're building your own loyalty thing, so then you can start pushing forward and rolling through the central part of the empire.
Well, it's easier to attack the fringes of the empire anyway, typically. If you can actually take three cities at once, and one of them is the AI's capital, you'll probably be fine, honestly. That's usually not easy to pull off, but if you could do it, you will certainly be fine.
And especially considering that the capital is probably the most populous, well-developed city, which is generating the most loyalty pressure anyway.
Yeah.
Someone else had mentioned that you could also capture a couple cities and then raise the cities that are, you know, adjacent to it in order to remove some of the loyalty pressure. And I actually posted a reply and expanded on that idea with something that I thought could maybe be done, but which I've never actually tried, so I don't know if this is possible or not. I don't know if any of you have tried it, but you could maybe also capture some other cities and then gift them to a neutral or friendly third party, and then you have less loyalty pressure from one other civ, and if those cities flip from loyalty and they go independent, they are, as far as I know, not applying any loyalty pressure anymore at all. So that also gives you a buffer to your cities, and it means that you can recapture them later at any time once you've got your loyalty shored up without further grievances or other diplomatic penalties. So if you don't want to raise it, that's another thing you could maybe try. I don't know for sure if that would work, though.
I feel like if you can take the cities, then you should just delay taking the first city. Like, all these things will prevent a city you capture from flipping, but it's just worse value than simply capturing a few cities and denying the loyalty pressure from being significant.
Yeah, I mean, if you can capture that many cities to begin with, they're probably all just going to reinforce each other with loyalty anyway, and you're probably better off. But I guess if there are a bunch of really small cities, especially if it's on the fringe of the other players' borders, then maybe not so much. It's going to be very situational. So you might be right. It might not be worth the trouble.
I just think if you can take and raise a city, you can probably, like, the odds of you having so marginal, just barely enough military units so that you can only capture that one city and then barely capture the next city and raise it, and then you're pretty much toast. Like, usually not. Usually you have enough units where you're killing the AI's initial armies, and now its cities are not as capable of resisting you because you killed their armies. And so now you can apply pressure to the cities directly. And so just don't take the cities immediately. Make it so they can't attack you, and then take a couple at once. Like, and yeah, don't be in a dark age, because that makes it a lot harder.
Yeah. I guess unless the other player is also in a dark age, in which case it just balances out.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. And yeah, sure, attacking somebody in a dark age is easier, but you don't need to.
But yes, it is doable. It is hard, but that is by design.
I mean, it's somewhat harder than fighting on your own continent. Because if you're taking those and you're throwing some governors in there, I would recommend Victor in the back city, so it can apply a little bit extra to the two forward cities, and then just any governor in the two forward cities of your triangle. It's pretty rare that they're going to have enough residual loyalty pressure after that that they're going to overcome Governor plus Victor AoE.
Right. And it's also probably a really good idea to save up a butt ton of gold prior to doing this so that you can do things like buy monuments and granaries in those cities if they're not already there in order to, you know, further give yourself more loyalty and to quickly build up the populations a little bit more. And like I said, use
Reyna. And like having the policy card for, for garrisons and stuff. Like, that stuff helps. It really makes the difference, but it's nice to have that in your pocket if you need it. Grab another extra, like, 3 to 4 loyalty. But you're already getting 10, plus whatever you're getting from the adjacent city pop. Like, usually it's enough pressure to keep yourself afloat.
Well, if you're on another continent, you're probably looking at, like, something like a -20 penalty.
Well, not anymore, because you took several of the surrounding cities, right? So you are getting some positive loyalty pressure from those other cities, just from their population alone. That's the big difference. That right. Taking one city is going to be a -20 for sure, whereas if you take 3 at once, one of those cities will have certainly have positive loyalty, and the others will have negative, but much less than 20, typically, because you are getting some loyalty help from just local pop. Yeah, from two other cities, actually, because you took a triangle of cities.
Yeah, and then on top of that, if there's like little islands and stuff like that off the coast that you can settle on as well to give yourself additional loyalty pressure from your own civ, then, you know, that will also help.
Yeah, sure.
Especially if you can do that well in advance and actually get those populations fairly high. And, yeah, use domestic trade routes.
I will also say this doesn't have to be, like, literally same term share of three cities, but you want them within a few turns of each other.
Yeah, even in worst case, you're probably...
cities will flip in 3 to 4 turns.
Yeah, I was going to say, even in the worst case, you're probably talking about a 3 or 4 turn buffer for you to, you know, capture the one or two other cities. I mean, if
three
it's that
is the worst case.
Yeah, if it's that bad, I don't know if capturing one other city is going to help. It'll probably just
you
delay
need two
it.
Others.
Yeah, it'll probably just delay it from, like, 3 turns to, like, 8 turns. But yeah, you really do need to plan on getting at least 3 cities within that 3-turn time period, or else you will be in trouble.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
hey,
maybe it's possible on some map layouts, but I have never seen, I've yet to encounter myself a scenario where if I capture 3 cities that are relatively close to each other and somewhat triangular to each other on the same turn, or close to the same turn, I've yet to see loyalty become an insurmountable problem after doing that, absent any other further investment, like maybe a policy for a unit garrison, but usually not. Like, usually just that by itself is good enough, or it gives me enough time that, like, I have 10 to 20 turns to start capturing additional cities beyond those, and then then it's fine.
Yeah, you just really have to plan ahead for it, and have your governors and stuff like that ready to go, have the right policies in place, and just make sure that you've got enough units to get the job done in that short time window.
So yeah, that's the gist of the advice. Make more military units. That's pretty much the correct way to play Civ. So
isn't
there you
that
go.
Like 90% of the ways you play every game anyway?
Yes, because it also helps you from getting attacked yourself, because you're military.
To be fair.
Ooh, tasty.
I do also construct infrastructure that allows me to pay for my units, typically, at least in so far as I need to before I can start conquering that infrastructure. So I don't only build units.
I mostly in every game you play, every other type of game you play, you're usually building units and conquering.
Is there also
that's the proper way to play? What are you talking about?
I agree with you, but.
Is there also an alliance that you can do with another civ that, like, eliminates...
Cultural alliance, yeah.
That eliminates their loyalty pressure onto your city? So, yeah.
Cultural alliance. So, yeah, make a cultural alliance with one of the other people on the island.
Right.
If you're getting trolled by a third party, for sure, if you can manage a cultural alliance, do it, yeah.
Yeah, and that will take some of that other civ's loyalty pressure off of your cities as well, which will help. And I guess worst-case scenario, if you just fail completely, those cities will flip independent, and then you can just run away and let the barbarian free city units go fight your war for you. And then come back and take the cities later.
They will flip back, though, unless you keep putting pressure on the target AI.
Yeah, that's true. It'll take some turns, though.
Yeah, not that many. Like, if you're just taking one city, like he's saying in the thread, like rebels in 3 turns, it will rebel again in like another 3 to 4 turns to the civ in question.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, you really want to take a few cities
right
around the same time is the Yeah, all these other things help, but that's the trick.
And they need to be decent.
That's the trick that makes it possible.
And they need to be decent population cities as well. If you're on the fringe of the other Civ's empire, and you conquer like three cities that have one or two pop each, and then all their other cities have like 15 pop, that is probably going to be a losing endeavor as well. You need a decent.
Probably. So you'll keep one of them like that, because they will not have that much pressure from each other. So yeah. One of them was probably far enough away from the major pop centers where you're not going to lose it right away. But yeah. I mean, why would you want to take those kinds of cities anyway? Like, you want to make what you're doing to your opponent hurt your opponent, and you want to get benefit from conquering the opponent, which means you really want to grab their better stuff if you can.
Right, but if those are the only cities that you can practically take, you know, I don't know, maybe there's cliffs and stuff in the way that are blocking you from easily getting to other cities. There could be map factors.
Oh my gosh, yeah, okay.
Oh yeah, those mountain ranges, oh god.
If you have, like, nothing but mountain chokes, and there's, like, a one-pop city that's, like, you know, like, as strong as your strongest, you know, maybe don't invade in the medieval era, then. Like,
yeah.
Come on. Like, for most practical scenarios, this isn't going to be a problem. Like, if you can take the cities, then you can take three of the cities.
Yeah, if you cannot take multiple decent population cities simultaneously, then now is probably not the time to be fighting that war.
Yeah, just make more units, then you're good. We're going to attack advantage and hit them when it's easier. It's also acceptable.
There is a question from one of the users on this thread, though. It's post number 22 from Abaxial, asking, what about the AI? Has anyone seen the AI successfully invade another continent, other than to attack a city-state?
Yeah, unless it gets a foothold like that, not really.
Yeah, I haven't seen much in the way of intercontinental invasions from the AI since Rise and Fall.
I suppose that means, on the bright side, our loyalty pressure is keeping them away, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I do, however, still occasionally see Montezuma forward settle me, only to have his forward settled city flip from loyalty, like, 10 turns later. He doesn't do it as often since Rise and Fall, but he still does it.
A lot of the AI still do that. You're you have all this area to the other side that was even better, and you settle towards me?
Well, it's a free city. Yeah, but the AI probably shouldn't be doing that.
They're definitely weighted so that they don't do that as often, but they still do it, and it still happens more often than it definitely should.
Often enough for us to comment on it, let's put it that way.
There was another post, I don't remember where it was, but it was someone saying that they really wish that the loyalty UI lens would show you loyalty pressure that's being applied in owned territory. Because I guess right now you can only see it in unowned neutral territory. So when you're trying to plan out these invasions, you don't really know how strong the Civ AI's loyalty pressure is on those fringe cities.
Yeah, it would be really nice.
Unless there is some unclaimed territory next to them that, you know, gives you a more rough idea of what that might be. So, yeah, that is an instance where the game's UI does not give you the useful information that you would probably need to more accurately and reliably plan all that out.
There's not really a good reason to deny that information either.
Yeah, it would, even if it's the opponent territory, it would help to know exactly how strong the loyalty pressure that their capital is pushing out. Like, is it negative 20 all the way across the empire? Or are there little pockets of lower loyalty that you could come in through there and start your attack?
Yeah, and if it's a city on, like, the border with, again, a neutral third-party civ, like, that third-party civ might already be applying enough pressure to those border cities that they're losing loyalty already. And that is something you can see in the AI. On the city banner, you can see if the city is losing loyalty. But you can't see how much pressure is being applied. So if it's at full loyalty, but it's only got, like, plus one, yeah, that you unfortunately cannot see.
Yeah, what's annoying is that you can probably calc it, but it would be extremely obnoxious. And that's exactly the kind of thing that the UI should be presenting. It's unfortunate.
And here's also an interesting suggestion later on in the thread from Katzin, saying that I would love it if garrisoned forts provided loyalty to nearby cities, even if it was one of Victor's abilities. so that forts would not be as garbage. But does anyone else see anything else in this thread that is worth mentioning?
Just Lily Lancer also telling him to take the other cities.
What are you doing with those extra turns? Come on. I saw that.
Yeah, that's really all there is to it. Just take the other cities quickly enough and you're fine.
Learn to conquer, noob.
And Kolkion basically says what I say too.
Well, this has been episode 375 of Polycast. I have been Canis Albinus, and I'm with our other co-hosts, Miss Makalua. Who's muted?
I was trying not to jump the gun on the queue again.
Mr. Me and Team.
I know how to solve loyalty pressure. It starts with Nur and ends with Aples.
Mr. Mega Bears fan.
Happy holidays, everyone. See you. Talk to you next year.
Yep.
Everybody have a good Christmas. There will not be another episode this year, if you hadn't figured that out.
Betrayal.
Civilization 3, 4, 5, Beyond Earth, and 6 sound clips, copyright Take 2 Interactive. Copyright The Polycast at thepolycast.net.